Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, October 1st, 2015. Only a couple months left, shopping days till Christmas. Oh, gee. This year is just screaming by. I'll be talking a bit about Mars and the NASA water announcement, but it gives me a platform to talk about the real issue of water on Mars. Just a couple quick announcements. There is supposedly a super El Nino. You're going to be blasted with this in the schmooze news and standard media. El Nino, supposedly, they're predicting a giant El Nino for this coming season. Well, what does that mean? That would mean a lot of rain in South America along the western coast. That's what the typical situation is. That's what El Nino originally started meaning. But they just can't seem to get it right because the most severe drought in history is occurring right now in those locations, and you can check that out. It's extremely dry. The rivers, everything is bone dry. The people are just in desperate, dire straits relative to fresh water. The government cannot respond, but at the same time, they're saying this is a super El Nino year, which is totally the opposite of the expected result. So also, NOAA predicted earlier in the year, back in June, when they started the hurricane season that runs from June through November, through the 1st of November, I should say, they predicted a above-average hurricane season. Now we are at the end of September, and they're modifying it and saying, oops, no, we're going to have a below-average hurricane season. Well, wait a minute. The hurricane season is pretty much over. We got a month left, boys and girls. These people just cannot get it right. But, well, you know, when you get that government paycheck, life is good. Now, here's an article sent in by a listener about 67P, comet that the Rosetta mission is visiting right now. And they discovered a patch of ice on it. How unusual that they might find a little bit of ice on a comet. But here's the strange part about this. This ice forms, and then it disappears, and then it reforms again, and then it disappears, and it's not contributing to the tail. They admit that it's only about 3% of what you might find in the tail at any given moment, so clearly it is not contributing to the tail, and the tail is there all the time. It's ongoing business, so this would only amount to 3% of the tail material at a given moment, let alone certainly not enough to keep the tail supplied with water on an ongoing basis. But this kind of patch, it's down in the central region. Now, if you're not familiar with what 67P looks like, imagine you go to the health club and you pick up those single-piece handheld weights. It's got the handle in the middle and then two big kind of bulbous weights at the end. That's kind of what 67P looks like. So it's down in this hollow where the handle would be on the weight, on the gymnasium weight. So at any rate, this is very strange. Obviously, it is not a phenomenon relative to the nucleus because it comes and it goes. It appears and then it disappears. So that leaves them in quite a bit of a quandary over the issue of this ice appearing and disappearing. But clearly, I got a kick out of one of the scientists' comments. He said, well, gee, I guess it's not a surprise that we might find some ice on a comet because to date, they haven't found any ice on any comet, but this is a little different. It comes and it goes. It appears and it disappears. Also, interestingly enough, this also sent in by a listener, and I'm really glad listeners are out there searching around, and when they see something, they send it in. But this also, there's a strange surface phenomena that happens on the dust on 67P. Now, once again, the surface of this comet is covered with a dust that's comprised of nitrogen, hydrogen, oxygen, and carbon. These are the basic building blocks of life. So you might imagine that there could be some pretty nasty viruses on this comet nucleus. And so I don't think we want to go to a comet nucleus and then bring anything back to Earth to study. All studies should be conducted in outer space, but that's not what NASA has done. They actually went through the tail of a comet, brought the material back, and the spacecraft crashed into the desert, all blown to pieces. They still recovered the material that was caught by the comet, but basically potentially letting space-borne, very strange viruses into our environment. Just bad science, bad practice. You just don't go out there in space grabbing stuff and bringing it back to Earth. Really, really stupid science. But anyway, what's going on, there's a phenomenon. Now imagine there's a pile of dust. There's just a layer of dust of this carbon, nitrogen, hydrogen, oxygen dust on the surface of the comet. And imagine you took your finger and you started drawing a line. And every day you drew the line a little farther, but not just a line. It's in the form of a circle. And as the days progress over a period of quite a few days, I understand, this kind of finger groove, this finger-wide groove, grows into a complete circle. And then off in another place, it starts also. So very interesting. I would venture to say that this has to do with the electrical issues going on there. Now, it's not uncommon. Let me take another very good example, something called a fairy ring. Now, especially down south, I remember these were when I was a student at Tulane University in New Orleans. I'd go over to Audubon Park, which was just right across the street, and a beautiful, beautiful park. But in the spring and especially summertime, when the rains were coming, and you might understand the electricity, the lightning, the atmospheric electricity, a phenomenon occurred in the growth of a certain type of mushroom. And what would happen is there were two effects. One was electrical, and one was the fact that as the mushrooms grew, they used up the nutrients in the ground, and so therefore they expanded out. So they continually grew into a larger circle. But this was also related to electricity. And so it turns out that mushrooms don't grow in a electrically sterile environment. They grow very well when there's an electric field and electric activity going on. So that's why they're associated with thunderstorms. And of course, there's no better place on the planet than to have the summer thunderstorms than in the city of New Orleans. But at any rate, it appears to be a similar type phenomenon. But like I say, it's like you took your finger and started drawing a ring, a circle very slowly, and then completed it, and then you take your finger a little ways away and you start drawing another circle. And what's interesting is these circles, from what we understand now, do not overlap. They touch, but they don't overlap. So very interesting phenomenon, something I'll definitely be keeping an eye on. Many people have written in asking me to give my opinion on CERN, the magnetic accelerator, the searching for the alleged God particle, and over in Europe, and earthquakes. Now, apparently, this is empirical association, there are large major earthquakes and also airplane crashes when the CERN either powers up or does what they call a dump. In other words, they dump the magnetic field. And, you know, I have to laugh because, excuse me, it's not funny, but it's so stupid. If you buy a toaster, I mean, I don't care what you buy. If you buy a little desk lamp, down on the bottom there's a patch, a little tag, and it says UL approved. And also, there's a certification from anything electronic. from the Federal Communications Commission that comes down through the federal agencies. And basically, it has to be tested. UL is a United Laboratories. It's an approval that this has gone through a whole battery of tests, and meaning that you can drop it on the floor and it won't break, or that the wire is made soundly so that if you bend the wire, you don't get electrocuted, etc., etc. All kinds of little tests that have been built up over the years. But the issue is that you can't buy a toaster or a desk lamp or anything that is electronic without a UL approval on it. And the reason for that is because it could give off electromagnetic radiation and affect other devices like radios or whatever. And so, I mean, in when you're in an airplane, they ask you to turn your cell phones off so that you don't affect any conditions on the airplane. A lot of these airplanes are what they call fly-by-wire or wireless. They have wireless transmissions going on in the airplane that actually operate the airplane, so they don't want people interfering with this. But here we have a major scientific facility that apparently they forgot to pass through UL certification. And this thing, when this baby goes on and goes off, the magnetic field that it puts out is earth-shattering. Now, the question is this thing, is this baby causing major earthquakes around the world? Well, the timing is there. The fact that the turned on or off when airplane crashes occurred also is empirical. But, I mean, is there a relationship with this and these events? So far, the association is empirical. It cannot be denied, but that doesn't prove that that's what's going on. There could be other issues going on here. And so, anyway, it's something that would require some measurements. And so I'm surprised that people in the vicinity, I mean, if this was happening, then you would have radio transmission interruptions, you would have other, you know, cell phone degradation, all kinds of other things going on in this region at the same time. So, I mean, there's a lot of other things to look at, not just if there was an earthquake at the time. By the way, we have hundreds and hundreds of earthquakes every day on planet Earth. But the fact that these are major earthquakes associated with CERN turning on or especially off when they call it dump, when they just shut off that magnetic field, and that change in the magnetic field is what spikes. That's typically what causes major events or potentially could cause major events. So I don't know. I mean, it's something I'm looking at, certainly, but I don't want to make an announcement about something, certainly, with certitude if I don't have solid proof. And unfortunately, I don't. Possibly I'll put that on my list of things to do. There are some ways to actually check on that. But anyway, something that I will be keeping my eye on. Last week, I did a special on Pluto, and I encourage you, if you haven't done it yet, go to my homepage, go to the Picture of the Day subpage, and keep an eye on that. I'm now decided that the Picture of the Day subpage is where I'm going to concentrate my science writing, because pictures are very informative. You, the public, likes the visual parts. You can see something and then understand my interpretation of it. So it's a very useful tool. It's something I started back in, oh man, how long ago was that? That was back in the 90s when I had my one web page, and then also the current web page when it got restructured in around the year 2000, I started a Picture of the Day. But it was difficult for me to keep up with it with all of the other obligations I had on the planet. And so that's something I'm trying to keep now. And so when I do scientific announcements, etc., or like with the Pluto issue, or now with the Mars topic that we're going to deal with today, go to the Picture of the Day subpage, and that's where I'll try and concentrate these pictures. and keep up there. And I'm going to try and avoid having too many sub pages in terms of daily updates. So at any rate, back to the announcement about Pluto. A listener wrote in and asked if it's possible that it was snowing on Pluto. And this is something I've talked about quite a bit. I didn't use the term snow because snow typically refers to what we consider, you know, water ice crystals coming down, falling on planet Earth. But we talk about acid rain on Venus. So why not use these meteorological terms, but then qualify them and say methane snow on Pluto or nitrogen snow on Pluto, because that's what's going on. They're also discovering hydrocarbons, the black markings. They're able to determine that these are hydrocarbons coming in, and so that when you look at the haze layers, that was the main picture I was talking about last week, the haze layers in this atmosphere of Pluto, what you see are the chemicals that are literally falling down. They come in. How do they get to Pluto? Where are they coming from? Well, obviously, standard science can't tell you. Where they're coming from, obviously, is from the plasma discharge comet model. It's drawing this material in, and there's a wealth, there's just an abundance of chemical species out there beyond Pluto in the nebular ion cloud. Also, in my write-up about Pluto, which is there last week, it shows the, you can see the comet tail around Pluto from the distance shots that were released, and they were the only distance shots released of Pluto. From a distance sufficient to see the comet tail activity around Pluto. But anyway, so yeah, that's a great idea, and I appreciate the listener comment that you could call this snow. So literally there's a snowstorm, but and there is ice water in there also. So I imagine they're crystals. But I made a major discovery this past week, and I'll be posting it on my webpage. I did somewhat of a chemical experiment, and I created, in not a test tube, but a large pan, I created a solution that would be the equivalent of the Pluto environment, of the planet Pluto. And what I realized, in fact, is that Pluto has an internal heat source. So this is my major announcement on this topic, that Pluto has not just a minor internal heat source, but a fairly major internal heat source, which tells us that Pluto is really a pretty young planet because it's covered with this tremendously cold, icy material. And so the upwelling of when you see the picture, go to my webpage. I'll be posting that, or it's already posted. You can see that I've recreated the surface structure of Pluto, and so that's something that's very important to understand. Now, where is that heat coming from? Well, there's the Joule heating of the surface of Pluto, and so there's two effects. It's very difficult to understand what the combination of internal heat versus Joule heating from the discharge of the solar capacitor, which is part of the comet process. So at any rate, I'll be working more on that, but it was a lot of fun doing the scientific background work to create the surface conditions on Pluto. And go and see, and you can compare the pictures of my, you might call it stew, Pluto stew, and the comparison of that with the actual surface of Pluto. And so when the standard science cannot understand what's going on, clearly they're looking at Pluto through the eyes that it has to be 4.5 billion years old. Well, it's a small planet, so it would not have maintained its heat, certainly not being covered with this extremely cold, frozen nitrogen. That's liquid nitrogen and is cold, but solid nitrogen is even colder. So we're talking extreme low temperatures. And then water ice is frozen in amongst this, and the water, when it's that cold, is harder than the hardest granite. So this is an amazing issue, but I will be posting that, like I say, go to my homepage and look at the picture of Pluto that I have posted and check it out and then compare it with the real planet Pluto. Okay, just an update on the wing generator, something that's going on in the background. There are storage, I've talked about this before, but electrical storage mechanisms. One of them that I've been looking into recently, now just I'll preface this by saying that I've looked at electrolysis, taking and separating water into hydrogen and oxygen. That's a one of the original fuel cells. It can be rather dangerous, but under controlled circumstances, it's not really a big problem. But still, there's a big hesitation in the world today to use containers full of hydrogen. It's just a very volatile material with a little spark and enough oxygen, which we have in the atmosphere. It can become a very dangerous explosive. So there's another chemical reaction, and also compressed air. I mentioned that the wing generator can directly compress air. So here's another chemical reaction that has been studied. There's some commercialization in Europe on this, but basically you take CO2 and water. So CO2 out of the atmosphere and water, and you create methane. The chemical formula for methane is CH4. And so when you burn it back, when you get it back, you end up with water. So it's in carbon dioxide again. You get those back when you burn the methane. So it's not really what you'd call a polluting storage mechanism, but it's just not tremendously efficient. There are catalysts that can help this along, but given that it's relatively available and it can be done in quantity, and we're very much used to dealing with methane, the prime component of natural gas, it's a natural for the storage of energy. So anyway, that's something I've been looking at. There's more and more interest in the use of methane for rocket fuel. And it's been even suggested that if we ever get out to Pluto or places like that, or say Triton, the great moon of Saturn, that the methane could be used for rocket fuel. Well, that's great, but you also need oxygen in compressed liquid oxygen, LOX, to mix with the methane to burn it. And that's something that's particularly lacking out in the outer solar system. You do have water, so oxygen is available in the form of water, but then you have to dissociate the water and to get the oxygen. So it's possible, but water is not that prevalent in the outer solar system, and especially free oxygen. And the reason, there's various reasons for that. There's water and oxygen are more prevalent in the inner solar system. The lighter elements you tend to find out in the outer solar system. But also, if there were oxygen on an atmosphere like Titan of Saturn, which has a very heavy methane nitrogen atmosphere, or the other large planets out there, Uranus, for example, Neptune. But also Pluto, for example, has a lot of methane and nitrogen. But the issue here is that if there were oxygen in the atmosphere of Pluto, and if there were any lightning activity, which there would be, then clearly it wouldn't last long. it would be a big explosion. So that might be a reason why there's no oxygen, no free oxygen out in those locales. Now remember, when the burning fire in Naphtha, the rain of Naphtha, burning Naphtha back in the biblical descriptions of the ancient times, they talk about the burning fire in Naphtha, brimstone coming in burning. Well, that's when the methane and the hydrocarbons came raining in on the ancients and basically burned them. It was when that hit the oxygen in the atmosphere, it was a big fire, and that's what caused it. And then also the meteorites that were coming into the atmosphere at the same time, sparking that, and also plenty of electrical activity. This was during the passage of Venus. So at any rate, very interesting topic, how to store energy and get it back from creating. Okay, but that's a topic I'll be continuing to cover in the coming weeks, the storage of energy. So very important. Because this leads into another topic. Say, California, for example, has a mandate now for the storage of energy. And the idea is that during peak times, when the peak usage is going on, they want to derive a certain amount of energy from stored energy. And then during times when everybody's sleeping, they're not using much energy, it's a cool night, the air conditioners are not running, they can produce electricity, and then store it and then get it back. It has to be a very efficient process. And so they're looking at all kinds of alternatives to do this. And the storage of methane, the creation of methane, is one of them. The storage using compressed air is another one of them. But with the wing generator, this concept is modified a little bit in that the entire need for energy storage is a false one, predicated on the false requirement that the central power companies control the voltage. And the alternative energy is going to be simply an assist, like solar panels, etc. And so the idea that you have large-scale facilities storing energy, well, that's good. But in the system that I've designed, the central power company does not control the voltage. And I've talked over and over again, I hope people understand this, that as long as the central power company controls the voltage, they will resist and they will stop. I had an article last week I read about a couple in California populated their entire roof with solar panels and then were told that they could not use them because they were producing more than their legal limit. And this is more and more is going to happen, where simply they're going to tell people at a certain time they cannot produce energy, because over a certain amount they're considered to be a commercial entity, a commercial producer of electricity, which is absolutely absurd. So the idea that alternative energy, once again, it's a chapter out of my book, The McCanny Wing Generator, The Myth of Alternative Energy. It's a chapter you should read. It's a required reading to understand what's going on in the world today. But distributed energy with the wing generator, the large wing generators that will produce and replace the coal and the nuclear and the natural gas-fired power plants, distributed energy alleviates the need for large-scale storage. Because what you do is the voltage is not controlled by the central producer anymore. Voltage is controlled at the house. It's a much better system. It's much safer. It avoids the conflict of EMPs, electromagnetic pulses, that can destroy the entire grid. And because of the centralized control of the voltage and the power grid now, that's not possible. But they're going to hang on to the last straw, and they will go down. because eventually enough people will demand that they use their solar panels and other alternative electrical generation devices. But at any rate, it won't fall until the wing generator full scale come in and can literally replace them. Because right now, alternative energy is simply that, an alternative. It's something that can never replace the central power companies, and that's the way it was designed. That was the way it was meant to be from the very beginning, and that's why you have big companies like General Electric and Siemens and other large corporations selling up a product that could never, ever replace those central power companies. Just want to remind you that my webpage I've updated this past week. Very excited about this. This took a lot of work, a lot of preparatory work, and then finally building all the subpages. But my sales page has been rebuilt in the book section. So the top water filter section, I decided to leave that. That's fairly efficient. It's very well marked where to find the various products, etc. And so the green table at the top of my sales page has not changed, but down below that, the blue table is completely revamped. And so all of the descriptions are on subpages, clickable, all of the items. So when you go down to that section of the sales page, you see a picture of all of the products, including the emergency recalendar SunStar clock. There's a picture of that. I don't have all the gear on it, so you can't see literally how it works. But basically, there's a picture there, so people have a little better idea of what they're buying. And then you click on any of these items. It's kind of a table. All of the covers of my books, the CDs, the DVDs, the e-download products like the DVD number 4 or the Hillbop download. Those are all neatly categorized in rows and columns. You click on a page, for example, say my weather book. You click on that. You go to a subpage where it gives all of the description, and then you bop back to the use the left arrow on your browser to get back to the sales page. And so you can get a description of everything. But all of the products are listed there and with pictures, which is a new update. And then when you go down into the blue table, all there are the order buttons. Just, okay, I want this or this, and they're categorized as to... And the reality is now that most people buy the libraries. Very few people buy individual books anymore. Or individual, say, a CD or DVD. And that still happens. Somebody wants a particular one, and that's what they want. That's fine. But literally the economical way to go is if you're going to spend a little bit of money, hey, spend a little bit more and get the whole package. And so at any rate, spend a minute, go there. Also, just a topic, gold in the world today has, and I've already announced this, 253 times the claims for gold are 253 times the availability of gold. And I heard a very good explanation the other day associated with some people with carrot bars. And by the way, I just mentioned this briefly, carrot bars, that Graham Gold is available on my webpage. I won't say any more about that. Or Via Viente, this wonderful daily drink that you can take a couple ounces per day to get all of your minerals, etc. That's all on the webpage. But with association with carrot bars, there was a very good explanation for this 253 times claims versus availability of gold. And what's happened is that not that there are more claims today than normal, it's just that the banks and the holders, the people who hold the gold, like Goldman Sachs and other places like that, have removed large quantities of gold from the availability list. And they've stuck it in the back room. They're sitting on it. They're all waiting for the other shoe to drop. This ought to be a signal to you out there that this baby is coming down, and it's coming down hard, and it's coming down soon. And so anyway, once again, carrot bars is a way to own gold for the average person. If you were to go into a gold dealer you couldn't buy a gram of gold. They'd laugh at you, or they'd charge you an awful lot for it. But the average gold dealer is going to expect you to buy a sleeve of gold coins, which is going to cost you $15,000. Okay, and then they can't even deliver it to you. They'll say, well, it'll be 6 to 9 months before you take delivery. And then in 6 to 9 months, they're going to tell you, oop, the availability changed. It'll be another 6 to 9 months. So you've paid them $15,000, and you ain't got any gold, buddy. And so with carat bars, you get your gold right away. Anyway, all that information on the webpage. But that's what happened, is that the big holding outfits that have the gold have taken it off the availability list, and they're just sitting on it. Okay. Next topic, I already talked about the internal heat source on Pluto, very important. Just one other topic before I get to Mars. There's an announcement that there's a cold blob in the North Atlantic Ocean, and they can't figure out what's causing this. And it's they're blaming this on global warming. So no more on that. That's just a waste of time discussing that modern baloney. Mars water announcement. Now, this has to rank up there in the strange, stranger than strange category. First of all, in spite of all the hullabaloo, in spite of all the complete blanket announcements on all the news media, on all the internet channels, on all of the whatever it is out there, it covered this story. NASA did not discover water. When you look at the descriptions, they say they believe they have discovered water. And they say that they have spectrometer analysis that there is water there. But it's really a bunch of pictures, and they've associated with something that is called perchlorate salts that are associated with water. But all they have are some time-lapse photography of like little fingers coming off the base of drainage areas that would be like hillsides, etc., rock cliffs, and these kind of like finger-like appendages that are colored go out and then they retract. That's what they have pictures of. NASA has not discovered water on Mars. Now, we know that there's water on Mars because it's frozen up at the poles, the north and the south pole of Mars. There are quantities of water, but not enough that would like fill oceans or even lakes. It's a very minor amount of water. The majority of frosting at the north and south pole of Mars is in the form of carbon dioxide, what we call dry ice. And so that's what you see on Mars. But why the big announcement? The pictures that they had were from 4 or 5 years ago. Why the announcement Monday? Why the big pre-announcement of the previous week, all of the pre-announcement hype getting ready for this amazing news announcement that was last Monday? Well, it happened to coordinate with the blood red moon, which was actually on Sunday. But if you look at the calendar, it carried over into Monday, and this has to do with the Jewish calendar, the Shemitah, and the etc. that is going on, the new 7-year calendar that started on the 23rd of September, another nice prime number. And remember that 9/11 back in 2001 was the beginning of the 7-year cycle 14 years ago, two cycles ago. And so all of this, of these dates related to prime numbers, mysticism, devil worship, Baal worship, and et cetera. And this once again related to the Pope being in the United States at this time is a significant symbol of the changing of the guard, so to speak, relative to the United States. In other words, the United States is a wholly controlled entity now. Facebook went down this week. Skype went down, had 2 weeks. And from anybody that understands the world of computers, these were major software updates going on. And so these are much more control, much more saturation of analysis of everything that's going on. And so the computers, the internet, the social media, the Facebook, Twitter, etc., totally, totally controlled. I have a little story about this Mars release. There was a young woman, I forget her name, it was something like Shmira Imam or something like that, and she was writing all of these articles for CNN. And so relative to the Mars announcement, I went to her tweet and I touched on it, so I was going to do a tweet that then would expand out and follow her tweet network, which would be vast, of course, because it's associated with CNN and this article about Mars. And so I said in my tweet, I said, it is inexperienced, bubble-headed, novice journalists like you that allow NASA to promote its Tier 2 fairy tale science and promulgate it. And that was my tweet. And that was paraphrased a little bit. Pretty much that was word for word, however. So I clicked the tweet button. My tweet got blocked. They wouldn't allow it to go out. This is the level of control that is going on the internet. You cannot say anything bad about the promulgation of this complete baloney, whether it's Mars, water, or anything else that's going on. And that's part of what's been going on, is the complete saturated control of the internet. And no negative comments, only positive comments, yay, rah, rah, NASA, etc. But anyway, back to the story of Mars. Now, I've been on quite a few radio shows. In fact, let me just describe. I was on Bill Deagle's show Tuesday talking about this. With Leo Lion Zagami, and talking about the history of the Illuminati and the Jewish roots that go way back into the pre-Babylonian days, a very important topic. And then also the issue of the relative to the Mars water announcement. Also, I was on a radio show with John Moore Wednesday morning. And we went into detail. That was a very good discussion we had on the John Moore show. And then also I was a guest with Maria Heller. She's out of Arizona, has a wide listening audience. And it seems that whenever myself or Jim Fetzer are on her show, all of the communications break down. And so that happened. And I had basically good, you know, communication all the rest of the day after that, before that, but when trying to do the interview with her. And so we only did a half hour, and she put it up there with the statement that we're going to try and do this again, but that whenever I seem to be on her show, in fact, one other time I was doing a rather heated topic show with her, and we got all done with the show, and she went in to save it, and she calls me up and she goes, "Jim, the entire show was lost. It got hacked out of her system." So this just shows you the level of activity going on trying to prevent you, the public, from knowing these issues. But I used an example of the Middle Ages. Remember good old Christopher Columbus sailing across the ocean? He's got his band of merry men there. These are all mariners, seasoned mariners. And they're on these three little ships. These are little coastal sailing ships, the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria. And a lot of us wouldn't set across a pond on these boats today, let alone the ocean. So these were some pretty rough and tumble guys. But the point is that the sailors thought that the earth was flat, and that if they kept sailing, they would sail off the end of the earth, and that there was all of these storms and fire-breathing dragons, and they were all going to die. Well, Columbus, being of the higher echelon, the more knowledgeable people, knew that the world was round. And so he got his funding and stuff to sail west to try and find India. That's what, of course, he was looking for. He had underestimated the diameter of the Earth. And I'm not really sure why he did that, because it was well known in the time of the Greeks. They had it almost down to the correct amount. They were a little bit under also. But they had done experiments with shadows of poles and timing, etc. And they had a very close estimate of the circumference of the Earth and the diameter of the Earth. So they all knew. All these people knew that the Earth was round. But the sailors thought the Earth was flat. Now ask yourself, where did they get that information? Well, these guys were not, you know, it's not like they went to high school or even grade school. The common perception amongst the common folk, which was 99.99% of all the people, was that the Earth was flat, and that if you sailed off towards the horizon, you would fall off the edge and be eaten by fire-breathing dragons, and that'd be the end of you. That was the common perception. But where did they get that? Well, it was from the church. The church purposefully fed them with complete misinformation. Now, this has been going on since day one. Leaders have realized that they need to keep their cards to their chest. And really, it's not true. It's the fashion of running a planet on fear, deception, etc., to keep this certain people in power. They realize that if they didn't do this, that they would lose their power. The people would simply stop paying attention to them. Now, let's take a little event called 9/11. Two towers get struck by airplanes, supposedly come tumbling down. But the week before, Congress had voted down all appropriations for military expansion. They were cutting back the military. After 9/11, it was 100-0. How many times has Congress ever voted 100-0 on anything? And all of money appropriations, everything went through with flying colors. A little event, just happened to be on the horizon. So obviously a planned event to construct social, political, economic results. And did they ever get some mileage out of that? Anybody that says that that was a planned event is considered a crackpot, a conspiracy theorist. The list of names goes on and on. But the ability to control a press, to, in the case of this Mars water announcement, blanket coverage of the news media. And so everybody saw this. Well, what is the message? The message is, they like they typically do, they come in with a story, with a title, and then right about in the middle, they take a 90-degree left turn. And so they ask the scientist, well, how recent is recent? Well, a couple days ago, he said. You know, this is happening right now, water on Mars. But the reality is, they did not discover water on Mars. They discovered what they think are the after effects of water producing certain visible effects on Mars. And to have enough to actually make a difference, let's play devil advocate. Let's play devil's advocate. Let's say that, okay, what they observed was due to water, 100%. Let's give them full benefit of the doubt. There's not enough water there to make a diddly darn about anything, because the reality is, Mars, and this is something they're not showing you. I'm showing you on my homepage. If you go down, I've taken the pictures out of the NASA files off the satellite feeds, etc. And I show you where the real data is. And I go to my picture of the day's subpage, just scroll down, and you will see a lot of pictures and a lot of discussion on that. And so I'm not going to repeat all that on the air. What's important here is that, okay, after they say, oh, it was just yesterday that the water was there, but then the same scientist says, but it was billions of years ago when Mars had significant amounts of water, and they even hedge on that. So in May, they stole my work completely, hook, line, and sinker. Michael Muma and the boys at Goddard put the map up exactly as I have it in my weather book, which is from about published in probably around 2004 or 2005, put that up on NASA's homepage trying to take credit for it. But they said water was billions of years ago. So I came back and I said, no, water is recent. So they had to steal the recent word, but then turn it into billions of years ago. Now, why did this happen on Monday, this past Monday? Well, that's the red, the blood red moon, and also a blue moon. Now, a blue moon is two full moons in the same month. So the second full moon what you call the blue moon. So once in a blue moon is an expression we use in English to mean very rare. To have a blue moon occurring on a blood red moon, when it's an atmospheric condition that happens when it's almost a perfect eclipse, lunar eclipse, but it turns a color red, so it's a atmospheric effect from the atmosphere of Earth. And there's some great pictures of the moon coming up white, turning to blood red, and then changing back to white again. Okay, so anyway, the point is that why did they introduce this? And they had a big amount of fanfare the week before, NASA coming out, major, major announcement on Monday. Why did they have to announce that on Monday when the data was taken in 2011? Do you start to see what's going on here? NASA had to come out with a story, and it really was a very, very weak story scientifically. But the point is, the people who operate this planet are Baal worshippers. Mars is the patron planet of Baal. Now, let's go back to the sailors with Columbus. If you came up to one of those sailors and said, "Hey, man, the world's round. Don't worry. Chris has got it right." They would all looked at you like you were crazy. Now, we all know today that the world is round. There's still some yo-yos running around trying to pass off the idea that the world is flat. But believe me, it's round. I've been around the world, around the round world. And so have most of you. So it's third-party verifiable, and that's the crux. That's the litmus test for something of science. And so, but here's the point. If you would have talked to those sailors, they would have all sworn up and down that the Earth was flat and they were going to sail over the edge and all of them were going to die. This is what's going on today with Mars. NASA goes, oh, in 2030, we're going to send a man to Mars. Oh, boy. And we all get to watch it on closed caption TV from a studio in Arizona. You know, here's the basic situation. People repeat and think things because somebody told them. There's not a single person listening, including NASA scientists. I know they're listening. There's not a single one of them that has true firsthand information about the conditions on Mars a number of thousands of years ago. The Tier 1 scientists understand this. They understand that the geological features on Mars are crystal clear. The cratering is only in the highlands. There's not a single crater in the lowlands. That's where the oceans were. And the cratering is going on all the time. There might be a couple little ones, but that is very recent. The recent riverbeds that are still there. And the dust storms that occur, go to my Pictures of the Day subpage and see all of the dust storms occurring on Mars. They're going on right now. They're going on all year long on the planet Mars. And any of those geological structures, those physical remnants of water, would have been washed away after a number of thousands of years, certainly a million years, and certainly more than certainly after a billion years. There wouldn't be a trace of any of it. And so why does NASA have to come out and pound this down your throats, the flat Earth Mars theory? Because the reality is that Mars lost its atmosphere in the last couple thousand years. The Vatican, whose top tippity-top priority is comets and celestial disasters. When Hale-Bopp came in, the Vatican had a big observatory built and staffed by professional astronomers. They have two more big observatories now. What's the Vatican doing, the little Pope with his Middle Ages Renaissance guard running around the Vatican? That's the public perception, or go to Rome and kiss the Pope's ring. That's the perception. He was going to make an announcement about alien contact during his trip to New York. He didn't, because he couldn't get past the pedophile issue. The church is rampant with pedophilia. So are the other major religions, the Arab religions and the Jewish religions. It's right in their Bibles, basically. But the Pope couldn't get past the pedophilia issue, which is dominating the press regarding the church. So the Pope sure couldn't come out and start talking about aliens. Good grief. He can't get past base one. You know, talking about aliens is about third base or home plate on the trip around the bases. But anyway, back to Mars. They are insistent that the public not know anything about this. That's why they buried Velikovsky. Velikovsky was a Jew. If he would have, in normal structure, anybody doing something who's a Jew gets promoted to the sky and, whatever they're doing. But Velikovsky, they buried him. And any mention, he also talked about the Israelites being with Moses, not the Jews. So he crossed the path of their path a number of ways, but also primarily talking about the issue of Mars. That Velikovsky talked about the planet Venus, that the ancients saw this. This is what Velikovsky was studying. The ancient calendars, the rectification of ancient calendars, and the damage done by Venus to Mars and to Earth. And we get that from the Mayan calendar. We get that from the Chinese, the Tibetans, everybody, the Zimbabweans, everybody around the world tells the same story. So at any rate, very, very important. Go to my webpage. I also have a new update on Pluto regarding carrot bars. Carrot bars is a very important topic now that the economy is ready to fold. It's a way for people to put some of their money, some of their hard-earned money, into something that's going to be there. And gold has been the ticket for ages. Carrot bars is spendable. It's a very good system. The people who are working below me are doing quite well. They're working at it. Some people haven't picked up the torch yet and figured out that this is a good deal for them. So please, take a look at that. It's on my webpage. But owning gold in gram affordable amounts, a really important issue for you and your descendants to get this economy of the world turned around. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.